Garrison's my name, George Garrison. I grew up in Nicholson Hollow, well, lived most of my young life in Nicholson Hollow, born in Corbin Hollow. My mother was a Corbin and then married a Nicholson, so I moved into Nicholson Hollow right across from Aaron Nicholson's house, right across the river from Aaron Nicholson's. He was the king of the Hollow. They used to call it Free State Hollow because we had our own laws there. Nobody from the other state come up in there. Thought I'd tell you a little bit about myself and a little bit about where I'm from. I guess I could start with how we made a living. Most of us were farmers. Grow a little bit of corn, beans, maters, taters, you know. Fella told me a good way to plant Irish taters one time. He said, put pipe over them. Keep the dirt out of their eyes. Well, some people would, some of us would make some moonshine every once in a while to supplement our income. Some folks never would make any of the whiskey. It was against their religion, you know, but some would make it and not drink it. Some would drink it and not make it. Some would not make it or drink it. I didn't mind to make it or to drink it, neither. We didn't make too much of the corn, though, mostly apple brandy I made. Used to load it up in my wagon, carried down the road about a mile to where my car was parked. You know, it's only one time you could drive a car all the way up to my house. The county had got the road fixed up tolerable good, and my aunt from New Jersey came to visit. She drove right up into the backyard, but most of the time you'd have to carry the wagon about a mile on down the road to where you'd left the car. Well, I'd load up the moonshine in my wagon and carry it on down to where I'd left my car parked, and then load it up in my car, drive on into Washington, D.C. On my way out, I go right past Pete and Paul Revenuer's house. I'd wave. They'd wave back. Didn't know I had a load of moonshine in the back of my car. Well, you know, Pete and Paul, they got their start moonshining. That's the dirt of it. But it was prohibition, you know, and times were kind of hard, and you had to make a living some way. Pete and Paul, they were Nicholsons. They'd usually let you know if they were coming up to visit your still. It was the federal revenuers from Washington, D.C. They'd never let you know when they were coming up. They'd get into a heap of trouble that way. I heard tell of a couple that came up onto Catlett Mountain, up Broad Hollow. They said they had come up to one of the cabins over there, and there was just a little boy at home. And they asked him where his mama was, and he said, well, she's at the still. And they said, well, how about your papa? And he said, he's at the still too. And they said, well, we'll give you a dollar if you take us to him. And he said, he allowed that would be all right. So they said, well, okay, take us on up, and then we'll give you the dollar. He said, well, you better give me the dollar first, because you probably ain't coming back. But I carried my moonshine right on out past Pete and Paul's house and drive it on into Washington, D.C., park it outside Mr. Howard's garage, and leave it there. Then the next morning, I'd drive on home, minus the moonshine, but with a little money under the seat of my car. You know, it was a whole heap of a sight easier to carry your produce out to market in a car full of moonshine than a wagon or two or three, four full of apples or corn or something. And they'd usually give you a little better price for the finished product than they would for just the raw materials. I was kind of the producer and the middleman and the retailer all at once, you might say. So I got a good cut of the market. Had a partner one time who was a lying man, been crippled since he was about 6 years old, I guess. Well, we was running a load of moonshine one night, and he gone on into town for some moonshine cans. We called them cans. It's glass, you know. You wouldn't ever put moonshine in in metal, but we call them moonshine cans. He'd gone on into town for some more cans, and I was there at the still by myself. Well, it was a bright moonlit night, and everything kind of still. Directly, I heard a horse splash in the stream. Well, I got down real low where I could see through a spot between the branches up against that bright, clear sky. And there I saw Paul Revenue on his horse and his brother Pete right behind him. Well, I took off running. They shooting up over my head, yelling, "Stop! Stop!" But it didn't stop, not till I got to the top of the mountain 2 miles away. I was on into the store the next day. Pete and Paul's there, too. They said they'd busted up a still last night. Said they didn't catch the fella that owned it, though. Said they heard it was a lime man owned that still. They said if a lime man could run like that, they'd hate to see a sound man run. Well, you know, we'd make a little bit of moonshine now and then, but we'd sometimes go up in the top of the hollow, up towards the top of the mountain. We cut down trees for tan bark. You know, you cut down chestnut oaks. Lots of people said they cut chestnut, but I thought chestnuts weren't no good. So I cut down the chestnut oaks, you know. You leave them lie there till they turn to yaller. Then you take off the bark with spuds. You know what a spud is, don't you?
No.
Oh, you know, it's kind of like a long iron with a kind of one flat end. You slip it onto the bark. Just slip that bark right off. Clean as a whistle. Well, we'd take off the bark with spuds, and then we'd load it up on the wagon, a piece of a load at a time. Take about 3 trips up to the top of the mountain, and then you'd have a full load. You could load it all up at once, and the horse could take it on down the other side. We carried on into the tannery at Leroy. Get pretty good money from the tan bark and plenty of trees up there in the head of the hollow. We just leave them lie there and rot, just get the bark off of them. Plenty of wood for firewood or anything closer to the house. Applewood was mighty hot burning wood. A good wood for a fence post was locust. Locust grows anywhere you got an old field or cut down the trees or something, it'll spring right up. Kind of a wiry, thorny tree, not much good for lumber or anything, but makes a mighty fine post. You can sink it into the ground, it won't rot for 50 years. And if it's good and dry, it'll burn a fire with no smoke. So it's good to have sometimes. You can make your rails for between the posts out to chestnut. As long as you don't put the chestnut down in the ground, it lasts 50, 60 more years maybe. Lots of the houses, furniture we made out of chestnut. Sometimes you make a bed out of a sassafras tree. That will keep the evil air away, keep the bad air away. And if there's any bad air, it will kind of soak it up. Keep that away from your lungs, you know. And some people have they called it a paradise tree or heaven tree growing outside of their house. It will soak up a lot of the bad air too. You could tell if you ever cut one down, you could smell where it soaked up all that bad air. Nothing worse than a paradise tree except a polecat for smelling. Well, sometimes often the chestnut trees, we'd gather up the chestnuts too. Why? When I was a little boy, I'd hear the wind blowing through the trees at night real strong in the fall, maybe October or so. And I'd be happy. I was about 8 years old or so, and I'd lay there listening to that wind. And I knew then I could get up in the morning. I'd have to get up real early before the sun come up so I could get to the chestnuts that the wind had blown down before the hogs would get to them. You know, we just leave the hogs to run around and fatten up in the woods on the chestnuts and the acorns. That way you didn't have to feed them the corn or whatever you grew for yourself or to sell. But you have to get to the chestnuts before the hogs would get them. And I'd get up early in the morning before it was light. It'd be cold out. But I could gather up me some chestnuts and sell them and make me some money to buy me some shoes for the winter. So I was happy when I heard the wind blowing through the chestnut trees. Me and my first wife, one time, we get 60 pounds of chestnuts off of one tree. You know, you just spread out the blanket under it, and maul on the branches with a stick or something, or sometimes climb up in it and shake them. We got 60 pounds. I threw them over my shoulder and carried them over to Leroy. They give me $12 for it. Bought all the groceries I could tote home and had money left over. It was a good day's work. We could take it easy for a few days after that. It was only about 10 miles over to Leroy, so it didn't take too long to carry the chestnuts over there and come back home with a poke full of groceries. My aunt was my wife's aunt. I don't know what you call that. My aunt-in-law, I guess. She lived up further in the holler. She used to say you could use some of these yarbs and things for medicines, for making people well if they had the rheumatiz or something. You can make a poultice out of some of the flowers that grew in the fields. But I never knew too much about that. Interesting thing about her, though, was she lived up there for 25 years, and she didn't go out to the holla, to the store or anything, except twice in 25 years. When I was little, I used to know her before I got married. And I'd go up there sometimes, and she'd be sitting up there. I'd be outside. Maybe she didn't know I was listening. She'd be singing these old songs. Some of the older folks would know these songs, and maybe not too many other people would. A lot of people, you know, we'd play the fiddle or the banjo or the guitar, something like that. You get a couple folks together and play some music. And maybe in the fall of the year, you get together for a corn shucking or apple butter boiling or something, and get a fiddler and a banjo player and maybe a guitar, and you could have a dance in between. Well, some folks wouldn't dance, but most times you could get a pretty good dance going while you shift off on the work, you know. Well, it was pretty interesting. The apple butter boilings, you know, you'd have one of these long paddles with the paddle on the end, it's a long handle, and you put a boy and a girl on each side of the handle, and they'd stir on it. And if it ever bumped against the side of the kettle, they had to kiss. I heard down at Swift Run, they just go twice through the middle and once around and then kiss, just like clockwork. But where we come from, it was if you bumped against the side of the kettle. For a corn shucking, too, if you'd ever pull up a red ear out of the batch, you could get your choice. You could either kiss the prettiest girl there, or the girl you thought was the prettiest, or you could take a drink out of the jug of moonshine that was sitting in the corner. Well, sometimes I'd steal that red ear. More than one time, I'd slip it down in my pocket. I'd pull it up every once in a while. I'd kiss the girl one time and take a drink the next time. Well, after I got older, I'd kiss the girl every time because I had my own moonshine at home. I could have that whenever I wanted. But if you'd ever go around to where some of the old grannies or somebody lived, sometimes they'd be home maybe playing on the dulcimer or singing. Some folks wouldn't let their girls play any instruments at all, just the boys. And occasionally, sometimes they let them play a dulcimer, but not the fiddle. And then some folks, nobody would play an instrument. They thought it was from the devil, you know. And some folks, it didn't matter, the girls or the boys, they'd all play. But sometimes if you go up around, like my wife's aunt's cabin, she'd be up in there by herself. You know, it's not a whole lot of people around, so you weren't dancing or playing a fiddle or banjo. She'd be singing something like, a gypsy laddie, I guess. See if I can remember it to my mind. There are seven sweet gypsies in the north. They're calling to sweet Baltimore. They will sing a song that'll charm your heart and cause you to leave your husband. It was 8 o'clock when the captain came. He was calling for his honey-o. Oh, your honey-o, for she is not here. She has gone with the gypsies to laddie-o. Saddle up, my milk-white steed. Saddle up in a hurry, oh. I will ride all night till the broad daylight, till I overtake my honey-o. Oh, he rode east and he rode west, he rode on to sweet Baltimore. When he got there, he found his honey, she had gone with the gypsies to Laddie-o. Oh, it's how can you leave your house and land, it's how can you leave your honey-o. It's how can you leave your three little babes to go with the gypsies to Laddie-o. Oh, it's yes, I can leave my house and lands, it's yes, I can leave my honey-o. For I'd rather have a kiss from the gypsy's lips than all your lands and money-o. Well, she hadn't been gone but a very short while till she spent all her money-o. She spent the gold rings off her fingers and the breast pins off her bosom. It's once she was used to a feather bed and servants to her parlor. But now she is used to a bed of hay and gypsies all around her. Never did like some of those old songs that sort of mournful sounding. I always like a good fiddle tune. Oh, one they used to sing. Whew. Some people liked this kind of music, you know, they sang it all the time. Why, I had a friend and he'd always get his mother to sing him these kind of songs before he went to bed at night. Always had terrible dreams too. Get ye up, ye seven sleepers, and put on your armor so bright. For it never shall be said that a daughter of mine could stay with sweet William all night. He mounted her on his milk-white steed, and himself on the dapple gray. He drew his pistol down by his side, and away they went, riding away. Get ye down, Lady Margaret, he cried, and hold my steed for a while, until I fight your seven brothers bold, and your father you love so well. She held, she better had held, and never delayed any time, until she saw her seven brothers fall, and her father she loved so well. Stop your hand, sweet William, she cried. Stop your hand for a while. It's a many a sweetheart I could have had, but a father I'll never have again. You can choose for to go or to stay a while. You can choose for to go or to stay. I'll go, sweet William, you know. You have left me without any guide. He mounted her on the milk-white steed, and himself on the dapple gray. He drew his pistol down by his side, and away he went, bleeding away. They rode, they better had rode, and never delayed any time, until they came to his mother's stile, and a mother she was to him. Oh, mother, go make my bed, and make it both soft and wide. And lay my lady down by my side, that I may rest for a while.
Sweet William, he died before midnight. Lady Margaret died before day. The mother died for loss of her son, and 11 lives were lost for one.
I'll teach you a song you can sing along with. It's about an old farmer. It was called The Farmer's Cursed Wife, or The Farmer's Cussed Wife. You can sing the chorus, and I'll sing the rest of it. Your part goes, hi diddle I diddle I die, diddle I diddle I day. You want to try that one time? Hi diddle I diddle I die, diddle I diddle I day. All right. There was an old farmer lived over the hill. If he ain't moved away, he's living there still, singing, hi, diddle-i, diddle-i, die, diddle-i, diddle-i, day. He was working the fields with the sweat of his brow, when up jumped the devil right over his plow.
Hi, diddle-i, diddle-i, die, diddle-i, diddle-i, day.
Oh, no, cried the farmer, I am undone, for the devil has come for my oldest son. Oh, I've not come for your oldest son, it's your old scolding wife's the one. Sing, hi, diddle-i, diddle-i, die, diddle-i, diddle-i, day. He threw that woman up on his back, and he carried her off with a clickety-clack. Singing, hi, diddle-i, diddle-i, die, diddle-i, diddle-i, day. He carried that woman off straight to hell, said, I hope this place will serve you well. Sing, hi, diddle-i, diddle-i, die, diddle-i, diddle-i, day. 12 little devils peeped over the wall, she upped with her foot and kicked 11 in the fire, singing, hi, diddle I, diddle I, die, diddle I, diddle I, day. One little devil peeped over the wall, said, take her back, baby, or she'll kill us all. Hi, diddle I, diddle I, die, diddle I, diddle I, day. Well, she was 7 years going and 7 coming back. Don't you know, she asked for the pie that she left on the rack. Hi, diddle I, diddle I, die, diddle I, diddle I, day. This proves that the women are better than the men. They go down to hell and come back again. Sing, hi, diddle I, diddle I, die, diddle I, diddle I, day. Well, y'all, you're pretty good singers. You know, that reminds me, that's... Rick and I learned that song one time when I was going down into Madison. I used to carry apples down into Madison when I was a boy. We used to carry a lot of our apples into town and just sell them straight, a wagon full of apples. First time I got to help with it, I was about 10 years old, I reckon. And they let me drive the wagon into town. Well, we got up before it was light, and by the time we got the wagon loaded up, it was getting on into the morning by the time I got all the way on into town. It was a good part of the day was used up already. Well, time I got the apples sold and they unloaded and I bought the things we needed to and I headed on back home. It was evening. And by the time I got to the foot of the mountain, it was dark. Well, I wasn't but a boy and I got up awful early that day, so I was powerful tired. So I laid back in the back of that wagon and I was looking up at the stars. Well, before you knew it, I'd drifted off to sleep. But you know, that old horse did something a car won't do for you these days. It carried me right on back to my house. I'll teach you another song in a minute. I learned from Tom Farr. Tom was a good old fella. He lived a couple of ridges over. I didn't get to see him that often. They dug a grave in, and he put his steel in it. See, one of their brothers had been up in Pennsylvania, and they'd heard he got shot, so they thought the body was coming on home, being shipped home, and they dug a grave, but it never did come. So they had this open grave in the graveyard. They're just going to fill it back in. Tom said, no, let's leave that grave open. I got an idea for it. And well, they said, no, Tom, it's bad luck to have an open grave. You know, it means somebody died to go in it. He said, well, the only person old enough to die is old Aunt Hattie Varr. Nobody likes her anyway, so he talked him into leaving the grave open, and he put his steel down in there. They never did find it, but they say that he fell in that there one night and broke his neck, and they buried him right in the grave with his steel. I never did see him after that. So I suppose he did die. He had a, I believe it was his mother's second cousin, Hazel Garrison. She was had the same name as my father, but I don't think they was any kin. She knew more of these old time songs. She used to sing, I always liked this one. Where have you been, Johnny Rilla, my son? Where have you been, my darling young one? Been a-courtin' my sweetheart, mother, make my bed soon. I've a pain in my heart and I want to lie down. Have you been to your supper, Johnny Rilla, my son? Have you been to your supper, my darling young one? Yes, I've been to my supper, mother, make my bed soon. I've a pain in my heart and I want to lie down. What'd you have for your supper, Johnny Rilla, my son? What'd you have for your supper, my darling young one? Fresh eels and butter, mother, make my bed soon. I've a pain at my heart and I want to lie down. What color were those eels, Johnny Rilla, my son? What color were those eels, my darling young one? Black and yellow spotted, mother, make my bed soon. I've a pain at my heart and I want to lie down. Those eels were rattlesnakes, Johnny Rilla, my son. Those eels were rattlesnakes, my darling young one. You are going to die, Johnny Rilla, my son. You are going to die, my darling young one. What will you will to your mother, Johnny Rilla, my son? What will you will to your mother, my darling young one? A sweet home in heaven, mother, make my bed soon. I've a pain at my heart and I want to lie down. What will to your sister, Johnny Rilla, my son? What will to your sister, my darling young one? Fine horse and saddle, mother, make my bed soon. I've a pain at my heart and I want to lie down. What will to your sweetheart, Johnny Rilla, my son? What will to your sweetheart, my darling young one? Hellfire and brimstone to scorch her right brown. She caused this pain at my heart and I want to lie down. Where shall we bury you, Johnny Rilla, my son? Where shall we bury you, my darling young one? Down in the meadow where the green grass grows high, where my sweetheart can see me as she passes by. Oh, my favorite song about Tom. Sweet, you know, the rattlesnakes, that reminds me. That, you know, the government came in and bought up all the land on the Blue Ridge and made it into a place for people from the city to come. And they've just let it all grow back up to trees and stuff. It's all gone. It's no good anymore. Well, we used to grow the biggest cabbages up there. People said the land was no good. Well, the soil was thin, and you could grow more rocks than about anything else. I remember I'd be behind my plow, and every time you hit a rock, about every couple feet, and it'd throw you this way and throw you over this way. Kind of got to my back after a while, but it was fertile soil. It was thin, but it would grow the biggest tomatoes and taters. Well, it was the best for cabbages. And you know, cabbage, you can just dig along a furrow beside where the cabbages are growing and pull them up and stick them in there and cover them up with dirt. Leave the root sticking out. Then whenever you want one, you just go grab one of those roots and pull you a cabbage out. It's fresh as sometimes freezing helps cabbage. Makes it taste better. But those days are gone. They just let it all grow up to trees. Well, they were building a road up there. My grandfather said he thought they must be crazy trying to build a road on top of that mountain. Of course, he'd never seen these bulldozers and such. All we had was wheelbarrows and shovels and maybe a Ferno scraper. Fresno scrapers, they were called. I believe that's right. Some name from out west somewhere. But they had a blast through one cliff with some dynamite. Well, they loaded up a bunch of dynamite in there, and when they set it off, it blew a big hole out to this cliff, but it had blown up a rattlesnake then, biggest rattlesnake you ever saw. And there were snakes in there flying around in the air, pieces of snakes, and hissing and spitting venom. Well, by the time it kind of all settled down, the men went back in there to start working. The air was so full of that venom that 20 grown men passed out before it would settle down enough that they could go back in there and work. And that's the truth. But this fellow over towards Elkton, he knew this woman, Sarah Fincham was her name, and she knew one of the prettiest songs about sweethearts that I ever heard. I think goes something like,
"As I walked out one May morning down by the greenwood side, there I saw a fair pretty maid, and all alone she cried, 'If you'll come home with me, it's home with me to stay. You may have my oldest son, your husband for to be. No, I'll not have your oldest son, he's neither lord nor king, for I intend to be the bride of none but John of the Hazel Green. Oh, his arms are long and his shoulders broad, he's the flower of all his kin. His hair hangs down like links of gold, John of the Hazel Green.' As she rode down that lengthy road and drew near to the town, out stepped John of the Hazel Green, and holp his lady down. It is 30 times he kissed her cheeks, 40 he kissed her chin, and 50 times her ruby lips, and led his lady in. If ever I have forsaken you, I hope heaven will forsake me and send me down to the torment place, there forever to be. If ever I have forsaken you, the rocks must melt with the sun, the fire shall turn to ice, and the raging sea shall burn."
John of the Hazel Green, they called it. Never heard that anywhere except right around where Sarah Fincham lived, and a little bit north of where I live. Traveled around, hear a lot of these other old songs, but never heard that one anywhere else. Well, I'll teach you the song that Tom Barr used to like to sing a lot. You could hear it kind of up and down around the Blue Ridge. They called it the good old man, or the old cuckold. But it was kind of had a hard tune to sing. So I've heard it some young folks singing it lately, and they had an easier tune to it. And changed words, still kind of have the same story to it, but they called it Five Nights Drunk. And it's got two parts to it. One for the fellas and one for the ladies. So I'll teach you each of your parts, and then you can kind of sing it along. Most of it's not too hard, I don't think, and you can sing along with it. It kind of repeats itself a lot, so you can catch on. I'll teach it to you like they used to teach us hymns. I'll sing a line and then you sing a line back. Goes some. Well, this is not a hymn, but this is how they used to teach us hymns. Goes this first part's for the fellas. Well, the first night I came home. No, you sing it. Drunk as I might be,
I
saw a horse standing at the gate.
where my horse ought to be.
Where my horse ought to be.
I said, wifey, little wifey.
I said, wifey, little wifey.
Please explain this thing to me.
Explain this thing to me.
How come there's a horse standing at the gate?
How come there's a horse standing at the gate?
Where my horse ought to be.
Where my horse ought to be.
Now here's the part for the ladies. She said, you blind fool, you sweet fool.
Can't you ever see?
Can't you ever see?
That's just an old milk cow.
That's just an old milk cow.
My mother sent to me.
My mother sent to me.
Now the men have one more part. Well, I've traveled this wide world over.
About 100 times or more.
But a saddle on a milk cow.
I've never seen before.
Now that's how it goes, you know, so it's, every verse is kind of about the same. Second time it goes, well, the second night I came home, drunk as I might be, I saw a hat on the hat rack where my hat ought to be. I said, wifey, little wifey, please explain this thing to me. So it goes along pretty much the same, except for just a few words change each time. So you sing along and just listen up for whenever the new thing comes in, and I'll try to remember what those are. Why, are you gents ready? Well, the second night I came home, drunk as I might be, I saw a hat on the hat rack where my hat ought to be. I said, wifey, little wifey, please explain this thing to me. How come there's a hat on the hat rack where my hat ought to be? She said, you blind fool, you sweet fool, can't you never see? That's just an old chamber pot my mother sent to me. Well, I've traveled this wide world over about 100 times or more, but a J.B. Stetson chamber pot I've never seen before. Well, the third night I came home, drunk as I might be, I saw a coat on the coat rack where my coat ought to be. I said, wifey, little wifey, please explain this thing to me. How come there's a coat on the coat rack where my coat ought to be? She said, you blind fool, you sweet fool, can't you never see? That's just an old blanket my mother sent to me. Well, I've traveled this wide world over about 100 times or more, but buttons on a blanket I've never seen before. Well, the fourth night I came home, drunk as I might be, I saw a pair of pants laying on the floor where my pants ought to be. I said, wifey, little wifey, please explain this thing to me. How come there's a pair of pants laying on the floor where my pants ought to be? She said, you blind fool, you sweet fool, can't you ever see? That's just an old dish rag my mother sent to me. Well, I've traveled this wide world over about 100 times or more. Put suspenders on a dish rag I've never seen before. Well, the fifth night I came home, drunk as I might be, I saw a head laying in my bed where my head ought to be. I said, wifey, little wifey, please explain this thing to me. How come there's a head laying in the bed where my head ought to be? She said, you blind fool, you sweet fool, can't you ever see? That's just an old cabbage head my mother sent to me. Well, I've traveled this wide world over about 100 times or more, but a mustache on a cabbage head I've never seen before. Well, give yourselves a hand. You're pretty good. Well, wish I had a fiddle player here. I feel like doing some dancing. I never did learn to play the fiddle, though. So maybe that's enough singing. And I have to tell you about the time I was out hunting, though. Just getting on, kind of ought to be going on pretty soon. Have my talk with what's his name, but I was out hunting one time, and my little dog was running the rabbit. And don't you know, some fool had left a mowing scythe laying out there with the blade sticking straight up in the air. And my little dog runs smack into the blade of that scythe and it cut him clean in two, from his nose to the tip of his tail. Well, I seen him flop over into two pieces, so I run up there and I grabbed him and slapped him back together and wrapped him up in my shirt. Well, I carried him on home, and I put him in some turpentine and put him in front of the stove. And, you know, after about a week or so, I thought I'd begin to saw his nose twitching just a little bit. After 2 weeks, I thought I'd begin to see his tail wagging just a little bit. So whenever it come a sunny day, I take him out and put him in the warm sunshine about the middle of the day. And after about a month, he was looking pretty frisky. So one time when it was pretty warm, the sun was out, I took him outside, I unwrapped him, and he hopped up about as good as new. But don't you know, in my haste to slap him back together, I had put him up wrong side too. But after that, he was a better rabbit dog than ever. He could run on two legs for a while, and when those got tired, he'd flip over and run on the other two. And with a nose and a tail on each end, he could point those rabbits going and coming. Well, I thought I'd seen a little dog like that crossing the road the other day. It probably happens more than I think. Back in the winter of 1917 and 18, it snowed. It was the coldest winter anybody can remember in Virginia, for it to just snow and snow to lie on the ground and stay there. It snowed about the middle of October when the leaves were still on the trees, and you didn't see the ground again until past Easter, while the rivers had all froze over, and whenever you'd come with a wagon full of wood or something, you could just drive the team and the wagon and everything right on across, right on the ice. Well, it was about middle of January, I guess. I was laying in my bed, and I kind of woke up several times, and I thought it ought to be morning, but it never was. It was dark. Well, I thought I must not be sleeping too good. Must have been the turnips or I ate or something. But after a while, I just couldn't sleep anymore. And I laid there and laid there. And I thought, began to think something was wrong. The sun was not coming up. But directly, I began to, you know how, if you're laying in the bed in the wintertime, a lot of times the snow will blow in through the rafters and around the eaves and stuff. You'll wake up with maybe about that much snow on top of your comforter. But this time I could see the snow kind of sifting in, and directly I began to see, I thought I saw some coming down through my chimney. Just kind of easy, like not like it was falling. And I just began to put two and two together. So I tried to get out my door. I tried to push on my door. And I pushed it just a little bit. It wouldn't open very far, and some snow come piling in from above the door. So I began to suspect that I was right in my assumptions. I tried to climb out the window in the loft. I couldn't open the shutters. Snow come piling in, and they wouldn't push very far. Well, I know what had happened. We'd had the big snowfall, and I was buried. Well, I thought I'd just make the best of the situation and wait till it melted down a little bit. So I commenced to just eating up what I had in the house and burning up the wood I had there. Well, after a while, I'd eaten up all the meat I had in the house, and my wood was all gone. I'd burned up about half my chairs in the fireplace, so I thought I'd better go on out and see if I could find me some wood or some meat or something. I still couldn't get out my window nor my door, so I tried climbing up the chimney. Well, I got to the top of the chimney, and there was, I could see up above me the sky. There was a hole where the smoke from the chimney had melted through the snow. Well, I climbed on up there and looked around, and as far as I could see, there was just snow. I couldn't see a single tree. I could see a little smoke rising from a neighbor's cabin about a half mile on down the hollow. Well, I slid on back down, and I made myself some snowshoes out of some white oak split baskets, and I took my axe and my gun, and I set out looking around. Well, directly up on top of Brown Mountain, I saw one big old pine tree sitting up on top of a cliff that was out sticking out of the snow. The wind had blowed the snow off the cliff, you know. So I climbed on up there, and I commenced to chopping on that pine tree. I thought I'd at least stay warm and maybe eat cornmeal and sorghum if I couldn't get me any meat. So I laid down my jacket and started chopping on this tree. Well, every time I hit it a lick, a frozen possum or coon would fall out of that tree from where they'd been up in there. Well, I got 30 coons and 20 possums. I stuck them in the pockets of my jacket, and I kept on chopping on this tree. Well, after a while, it come on down, and I began to lop off the branches, you know. And as I lopped the last branch off that pine tree, I realized I'd made a mistake, because without the branches to hold it, it began to slide off the cliff, the whole trunk of that tree. Well, I made for it with my axe to catch it, but I missed it by just about that much, and away it went down the side of Brown Mountain, and me standing there watching it go. It slid right on down Brown Mountain, right across Frozen Big Run at the bottom, and started on up Rocky Top on the other side. Well, it got up almost to the top of Rocky Top, and it kind of hung there a minute still, and then it started back down. It came right on down Rocky Top, right across Frozen Big Run, and right back up Brown Mountain towards me. Well, I thought the good Lord must have been smiling on me that day. So I took out my axe, and I made for it, but I just missed it by about that much, and it began to slide back down again. Well, after that, I thought there was nothing I could do. I watched it for a while. Down it would go down Brown Mountain, cross Big Run, and up Rocky Top on the other side. It would hang up there, and every time it wouldn't go quite as far up, so I never could reach it anymore. It would just go, sliding back and forth. So I threw some branches up over my back that I could, and walked on back home, cooked up some of the possums and coons, and I lay in bed at night listening to that tree sliding down Brown Mountain over Big Run and up Rocky Top. Well, I'd about burned up all the branches and eaten up most of the possums and coons. I didn't hear that tree sliding anymore, so I thought I'd go out and chop it up and carry some of it home. I got up and I followed on down Big Run to where I thought it would be, and I looked and looked, and I couldn't see it. So finally I climbed back up to the top of Brown Mountain to the cliff, and I looked straight down, and I could see kind of like a trench going down through the snow where that tree had been sliding, kind of wore down into the snow. So I followed it down, and when I got down there to the bottom of it, I looked down in, and I still didn't see my tree. I climbed down in there, and there in the bottom of that trough was a little toothpick about that big, still wiggling just a tiny bit. That old tree had worn itself down to a frazzle, sliding back and forth, and it still had just a little motion to it. So I picked it up and picked the possum and coon meat out of my teeth, and that's what become of that pine tree that used to be up on top of Brown Mountain. Well, I've enjoyed talking to you all, and if Spender is around here, maybe I better go talk to him before I fall asleep or something. Unless somebody brings out a fiddle, that might wake me up a little bit. Good night.